We have Ed from Beacon Pest Control in the studio. Is it still windy and wet?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's supposed to be up in the 20s, 25 miles an hour all day.
Right. Do you go clam digging?
No.
No? Okay.
I used to.
Yeah?
Not so much anymore.
Right. Right. I see the Beacon trucks.
Yes,
I saw one yesterday.
We're everywhere.
Right. You're everywhere. So with the wet weather and, you know, living on the coast, that brings fungi, doesn't it?
Yep. We're the fun guys.
yeah.
Fungus is a large part of human endeavor or human activity. We don't think about it a whole lot, but, fungus is highly prolific. It's one of the original organisms to populate the land.
Hmm.
Once upon a time we used to have fungus that had fruiting bodies that were, 10, 12 feet tall.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so the fungus are kind of the original scavengers. They break down the anything that can't defend itself gets broken down, whether it's living or dead. Fungus is very effective at getting nutrients without needing sunlight.
Okay.
So the one thing that fungus does need is moisture. Mm-hmm. That seems to be key across the board. And so there's different kinds of fungus that exist for, they occupy different moisture levels and different materials, and some of them are highly specialized. Mm-hmm. No, actually, most of them are highly specialized.
What do you mean, specialized?
There are things like the psilocybins and such. They produce neurotransmitters, and there's actually a field of study that the researchers believe that the neurotransmitters helped humanity develop our brains because our ancestors were consuming the mushrooms. And
you mean the magic mushrooms?
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But there's a whole host of other kinds. So there's millions of different kinds of fungus in the world. And in pest control, we actually use some of those to our benefit.
Really?
Yeah. So the most people think of pesticides as, chemicals, and the majority of our materials came out of the petrochemical industry in the 50s and the 60s. There are some fungus that are so highly specialized that they only go after specific species of insects. And National Geographic actually did a special on a particular fungus that goes after ants.
Hmm.
And then once the ant's been exposed, the fungus hijacks its body, causes it to climb to a high point, lock itself onto a leaf or a branch, and then the fungus consumes it, and it's helpless in its own body.
Wow.
Yeah. And then once the fungus has matured, it releases a fruiting body that kicks all these spores out to attack the next ants.
Wow.
But it's specific to certain species of ants.
Wow. And you guys use that?
Well, we don't use that specific one to go after ants. But for bed bug control, we haven't had any products that were effective against bed bugs for many years.
Mm-hmm.
They found that bed bugs were resistant to a lot of the materials that they're already licensed for use. Your pyrethroids and your organophosphates and things of that nature, the bed bugs simply weren't affected by it.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, keep in mind when you're dealing with bed bugs, you're dealing with areas where people have to occupy. Mm-hmm. So, beds and things of that nature. So this particular fungus can be applied at very low dosages, and it actually attacks the bed bug, gets into its gets through its skin and consumes it from the inside out.
How come it doesn't work on humans?
Well, excuse me. A lot of times it's a function of exposure.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, a lot of these funguses are specialized, so this one has actually evolved to go after insects.
Mm-hmm.
If you were kept in an area where there was a really, really high concentration of the spores, then yes, you could become sick as a result of it. But at the dosages that it's being used at, in the places that we apply it at, you're just not getting the exposure.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's kind of like sunlight. You know, a little bit's good. You know, you make vitamin D, you're healthy, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Too much of it.
We get so much of it around here, you know. Talking about actually what I've dubbed the bed bug fungus. Kind of hard to say, bed bug fungus.
It's a bit of a tongue twister.
Right. But it was originally, was it originally for ants or targeted ants? Or did we manipulate it to go after bed bugs, or it just kind of just does both?
No, this is actually something right straight out of the dirt.
Okay.
It's a natural
Mother
fungus.
Nature did.
Yep, yep. Well, Mother Nature's been doing these things for a lot longer than we have.
And, right.
You know, this fungus is one that's fairly common in the soil. You just, you know, if it's packaged correctly and applied correctly, then it's lethal to...
Okay, so let's say a hotel's got bed bugs. Do you go in there and just spray a bunch of this fungus on the bed, or how do you do
no.
that? No.
No? No. You know, like anything, you know, as I was describing before, it's like sunlight. You know, a little is good, too much is bad. With these products, we want to try and foster them so that we can use them for years to come.
Mm-hmm.
And to that end, we only apply them where the pests are going to come in contact with it. And we try very hard to make sure that people have no contact with it.
Right.
Not because it's particularly toxic, but just because we don't need them coming in contact with it. They're not the target.
Right.
You know, so the good news about these products, though, is that because it's something that's inherent in our environment to begin with, you know, it's not particularly toxic to us.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we get a good 3 months' worth of service out of it. The way that we approach this in like commercial establishments is to go in and treat it with heat to begin with. That knocks down the initial population.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fungus is used afterwards to make sure that, you know, if there's anything missed at all or if there's a reinfestation, it gets it before it becomes established.
So are they like, I don't know, little tablets? Is it a spray, a little eyedropper, or is it like...
Well, we use it as a liquid.
Yeah.
It's actually, you don't mix this stuff with water. If it comes in contact with water, it's ruined.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because the spores germinate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it actually has to be delivered in an oil base. We have an odorless oil that it's prepared with.
Mm-hmm.
And it's applied at a very low dose to surfaces that the insects will come in contact with, and
right.
It's the moisture in the insect's body that activates the fungus. Yeah,
man, that still kind of creeps me out.
It's a little creepy because you know, when you think about how much fungus spores are in the air,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there's, you don't take a breath where you don't inhale fungal spores,
right?
You know? And, you know, this is kind of where folks who have homes that end up with black mold get into trouble. It's because, you know, when that black mold gets established, the dosage of spores that you're being exposed to is high enough that it can actually cause, you know, injury. So it's sometimes a wonder that we exist because of all of the things out there that want to eat us.
Is black mold, is that considered a pest? Is that something that you guys kind of deal with, too?
Yeah. Well, we certainly look for it, and we help people manage it. But, you know, as I said at the onset, the one thing about mold and fungus is that it's got to have water.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the key control element, is making sure that it can't germinate and spread. And so in homes that are dealing with black mold, they're always dealing with a moisture condition to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Showers. Leaks.
It can be showers, it can be roof leaks,
mm-hmm.
you know, leaks in the siding, window casings. So those are the kind of things that have to be addressed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we detect it, generally speaking, we have to pass that on to a general contractor. It's not something that, because at that point, it's usually the structure that's involved.
Right. Are there many contractors available now, like, I know you recommend contractors. Is it just, do you just say, hey, go find one, or here's a number, or?
Well, we do have contractors that we refer, but right now they're all booked up.
That's what I hear.
I have a need for a contractor in a couple of properties that I've got, and I'm looking at 2 years before I can get anything done.
Wow.
Yeah.
What are they doing?
Working their butts off.
Yeah? Are they building housing or something?
Well, there's a lot of them doing new construction. There's a bit of a I know out in Ocean Shores and along the coast, there's kind of a building boom going on right now. Or at least there has been for the last year. I'm not sure if we've reached the pinnacle yet or not, but the beach is kind of a roller coaster in terms of real estate. It tends to, you know, rise and fall.
Right. So anything else on fungus you want to talk about, or would you like to move on to other creepy crawlies?
Well, we can certainly move on.
Yeah, to the odorous house ant.
Yes, this is another moisture-related pest, and this time of year with the rains and the you know, we're not tropical here, but we're quite temperate, and the combination of heat and moisture makes homes very attractive, because during the wintertime we have a tendency to button things up, and our homes tend to trap moisture. And the odorous house ant is attracted to those areas in the house where moisture accumulates. So things like window casings and door thresholds and you know, kitchens and bathrooms where there's high moisture tend to be very attractive to the odorous house ant. The ant, when it sets up a new nest site, it tends to move in mass. So they'll send out a few scouts, and they'll find a spot and divide an existing colony, which can have tens of thousands of ants in it. Mm-hmm. And you know, half a dozen queens will pack it up. And
half a dozen queens?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And that's one of the biggest problems with the odorous house ant, is that they can almost reproduce faster than you can kill them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just giving them the finger on the countertop is not going to solve the problem.
Right.
You know, and you can't clean your way out of these guys. There's no amount of detergent that's going to prevent the insects from getting there, unless you leave the detergent on the surface and it's repellent.
Mm-hmm.
But the key element with managing odorous house ants is not to use the over-the-counter sprays.
Mm-hmm.
Virtually everything that comes in an aerosol can is going to be repellent. And if you're unfortunate enough to get close to one of their nest sites, you can actually fragment it.
Mm-hmm.
And so with these, with multiple queens in a colony, you can end up with several smaller colonies that now operate independently. And then you, when you're trying to get rid of them, you actually have to bait them, and they're not sharing food at that point.
So,
using a spray to go after ants in a residence is generally not a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it because it's not effective, or is there other reasons?
Well, once you fragment the colony, then you've got a bigger problem. It's not insurmountable. It's just more difficult to manage. So the spray products for ant control on the inside of structures are not recommended.
And how do you tell if it's an odorous house ant?
We actually can take a look at them under a microscope, but generally speaking, it's the smallest ant species, or one of the smallest ant species that we have here.
Mm-hmm.
They're generally black and well under. They're about an eighth of an inch in length.
Mm-hmm. Now, I heard that, like, if you smush them and smell it, it stinks or smells. There's an odor. That's why
you call that. I've never been able to smell them.
Okay.
I don't spend a lot of time sniffing ants. But,
right. Spiders, maybe, but not ants, right?
Yeah. So I don't know what they smell like, but I hear that that's how they got their name.
Okay. Anything else on the odorous house ants that we should know about?
Well, this is the time of year when they're setting up new colonies, so they're pretty much ubiquitous in the landscape. You know, around our homes, they like to live under things like rocks and stumps, and with this being their expansion period, this is when they're starting to move into homes. So
they're building.
Yes, and it quite literally is something that can happen overnight.
Wow.
Once the scouts pick out an S site, everybody picks up their baggage and goes.
So what can a person do?
Well, if you're on a maintenance program, then the exterior maintenance generally keeps them under control. But
because you guys put things out around the property that prevents them from
getting
to
the house.
We do
applications
to
the exterior, right? to suppress the populations around the outside, yeah, of the house. But for folks that are clients with us, we provide the baits on a for the interior as part of the service.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Inside and out.
Yep.
Okay, what if I have, like, dogs and stuff? Do I need to bring them in the house before you do your outside stuff?
Well, we don't want them following us around while we're doing the application, but yeah, the products are not being applied to the lawn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's, for the most part, pets are not coming in contact with it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And should I bring them in the house while you're doing your thing?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Yeah, because inevitably, what would happen is the Labradors are bad for this. They like to bite whatever's coming out of the end of the hose. You know,
right.
So, we generally have to make sure that the pets are not exposed.
And our friend Ed from Beacon Pest Control, our buddy old pal, he comes in once a month to kind of help us out with our pest prevention issues. You know, it's like a war. You know, it's like a battlefield, the house and the yard, combating the ants and the spiders and the this and the leeks and the fungus. It's never ending.
Well, yeah, it is. It's kind of a never ending thing. It's like taking care of your teeth. You know, mm-hmm. If you don't take care of them, they go away. So, Mother Nature is always, putting pressure on us to paint and to, you know, keep fungus out and keep rodents out. And so it takes regular maintenance. And, of course, in order to do maintenance, you have to inspect regularly. And that's a big part of what pest control, it's a big part of the function that pest control performs is not so much applying products, but, making sure that you see things that are coming before they get out of hand.
Right. You guys will crawl through the underneath the house and stuff, so
I don't
have to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, the first thing we do with any property that we're servicing is to get underneath of it and perform an inspection and actually create a written report so that you have a benchmark to start from.
Mm-hmm.
And then that way you're not doing things like, treating for the spiders when you've got termites.
Right. So we left off at odorous house ants. Did we cover everything?
Well, pretty much.
Yeah.
The real key to keeping moisture down in the wintertime is make sure you use your exhaust fans.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to take a shower, make sure the fan comes on. Mm-hmm. Make sure that fan is actually working. A good hot shower will leave an awful lot of water in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got to go somewhere. And because of the good sense codes that we have, houses are pretty watertight along with being airtight.
Right.
And
so there's nowhere for that moisture to go?
It's got to be evacuated somehow.
What about the heater? Some of those fans have a fan feature and a heater feature.
Mm-hmm.
Does that do anything?
Well, it helps to evaporate the water that's on surfaces, but
mm-hmm.
Once the water is in the air, it still has to be taken out of the structure.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it'll find a cold spot, and it'll condense.
Okay. Carpenter ants.
Yep, they're on the horizon. So the carpenter ant, most of us are familiar with them when they swarm, but that's usually mm-hmm. around Mother's Day, so we're still a couple of months away from that.
What are they doing right now? Hibernating or something?
They actually go to sleep.
Huh.
If they become dehydrated, they'll wake up. The condition's more like topor. They're not actually hibernating, but they're mostly asleep.
Mm-hmm.
They can get up and go seek out water if they become dehydrated. And so that's the kind of thing that we look for this time of year. Because if you're finding carpenter ants wandering around the house this time of year,
mm-hmm.
they've got a colony in the house.
Ooh,
yeah.
Okay.
Because they don't eat anything that's in the house. I mean, they might get into some sugar,
mm-hmm.
but by and large, they feed on aphids and scale bugs and such. So those are outside. And uh, it's it's kind of normal for us to hear from folks that they see a few ants in the spring and then they go away. Mm-hmm. Well, if you're seeing the ants in the spring, there's a nest in the house.
Yay, yay, yay.
Because they're not feeding outside yet.
Right. But they go outside to eat and come back?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So they don't actually eat wood. They just mm-hmm. carve it up to build a nest.
Yeah.
And in doing that, they build a place to rear their young. Most of the colonies that we find in homes are not going to have a queen in them. What these are satellite nests. You'll have a queen that's established in a stump or a log or something on the outside, mm-hmm. and it could be 100 yards away from the structure. They mm-hmm. they have pretty significant trails mm-hmm. that go back and forth to the parent colony, and they actually ferry the young out. They kind of spread them around so that they have better access to resources.
They just want to take over the world.
Well, they're a little piece of it, yeah.
But they don't have like four queens like the odorous house ants.
No, it's a single queen mm-hmm. That supports the colony. There is some question as to whether or not they'll adopt another queen if one dies, but mm-hmm. that research hasn't been completed yet. So, to the best of our knowledge, there's only ever one.
Okay. So, if we see a carpenter ant running around the house, they're just looking for water, probably.
At this point, yes.
Yeah.
But it also means that they're already in the house. They're not infesting the house at this time of year. They're already there.
Yeah, they're already there.
Right.
You already have the problem.
Right.
They didn't just wander in. They're not scouting for a place. They have a place.
Right.
In the house already.
Yep. Yeah.
Ay-ay-ay.
So. If you're finding them this time of year, you start making plans for how you're going to get rid of them.
You can get rid of them for me?
That's what we do.
All right. And what do you guys do? Do you use, like, little bait trap thingies, or is that secret kind of stuff?
No, there's nothing secret about it.
Oh, okay.
There are a number of different approaches that we can use. Mm-hmm. Some are faster than others, mm-hmm. and so some of it depends on the client. How quickly mm-hmm. they want to get rid of them.
How icked out they are.
There's some of that, yeah.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, on a typical home, you're looking at actually having to apply product into the wall voids on the exterior of the building to create a perimeter that the ants have to pass through coming and going.
Mm-hmm.
And then an exterior application to the foundation so that as the ants are approaching the building, they're getting into a treatment zone.
Mm-hmm.
That and making sure that you don't have any tree contact, because if there's a tree branch, then the aphids and scale bugs that these guys feed on, they're up there in the trees, and if they don't have to walk up the tree, if they can just go from the roof to the tree branch, then they're shortcutting it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Just like the raccoons, you have that tree branch, they'll get into your place.
Yep. Yeah, you don't generally want to allow animals, mammals in particular,
mm-hmm.
but insects also. You don't want to provide them with a pathway to a tree because it just gives them far too much access to the house. The roof is not really designed as well for keeping things out as the walls and the foundation are.
Yeah. So when will the carpenter ants start to move around?
Well, at this point, right now, it's going to be because of moisture needs, but like I say, swarming takes place around Mother's Day here,
mm-hmm.
and usually about 3 to 4 weeks prior to that, they'll start trailing outside to find the areas to feed at, so they're going to go looking for the aphids and such. And so part of the reason that they go to sleep during the wintertime is that their food source is not in a stage that they can get food from.
Right. So. Okay. Now, when they're swarming, do you know what they're doing? Are they mating during swarming?
Oh, that's all about sex. Yeah.
Is it? Okay.
They're
all right.
They're reproducing. And what happens is the males leave the colony ahead of the females, usually by a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
If they survive the weather, if there's not a hard freeze or something like that, then the males are releasing pheromones the whole time that they're out. And once those pheromone levels get to a certain point, then the females will swarm after them.
Okay. They're just uncontrollable. They're just like, all right, buddy, let's go.
Yeah, it's that urge that won't be denied.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ed from Beacon Pest Control is in the studio, kind of helping us prepare deal with all the pests. And I'm not talking about teenagers. I'm talking about, like, bugs and rodents and things. And it's is it baby season right now?
Not quite yet.
But it's approaching baby season.
Everything out there is pregnant right now.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So this is the time of year where you want to try and head them off.
Mm-hmm.
The crawl space is a really nice place for a lot of smaller animals to hide at, because once they're in there, they can get away from animals like coyotes and hawks and eagles and stuff. So they're not being preyed on.
Yeah.
When they can get into a crawl space, it's a really attractive space for animals like raccoons, because they can leave their young there, go out and forage, and they don't really have to be concerned about predators getting in.
Right.
So it's very important to make sure that those crawl space areas are sealed off. This foundation vents are all supposed to be screened so that it'll keep animals out. Mm-hmm. The screens, however, have a tendency to rust out every few years. So, if you do have screens that are rusted out, they need to be replaced. That's one of the services we can provide.
Oh, you can do that?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. And in fact, that's what the guys are doing today in the rain. they're plugging up vents. Mm-hmm. Well, and of course, you don't want to plug the vent. Of course, it still needs to perform its function, which is to help water escape from the house. But the animals have to be blockaded out.
Yeah.
A lot of homes these days are being built with their crawl space axes on the inside of the house, so that's becoming less and less of an issue. But a lot of contractors are still putting an access on the outside of homes, and those are a principal area for animals to come in at, because they can dig underneath of the soil retainers, or sometimes the only thing that the contractor does is put a lid on top of the soil retainer,
mm-hmm.
and that leaves a fairly substantial opening. Raccoons will actually pick up the rain cover and go right inside. They're strong enough to lift them up.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we find animals getting in that way quite often.
Okay. So rats, mice, raccoons, those are the pests, the pregnant pests right now?
Yep. Yep. And, deer are on the horizon, but usually what happens there is they get left. The fawns get left in someone's front yard, and then we get calls about those.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Now, are deer considered pests?
It depends on how many you have.
Yeah?
In places like Ocean Shores, I'd imagine they all taste like birdseed and apples.
Yeah.
Cause
I hear a lot of people are feeding the deer. And
they're getting a lot of food.
And it's not a good thing.
It's not particularly good for them, no. Mm-hmm. I try to discourage feeding wildlife, because that's when wildlife goes from being wild to being
domesticated,
when they stop avoiding humans is when they start becoming a pest.
Yeah. Okay. What else do you want to tell us about baby season, Ed?
Well, those are kind of the biggies. The mm-hmm. The other thing that you want to do, aside from making sure that your home is sealed up at foundation level, is you want to ensure that you don't have tree branches that are hanging over.
Yeah.
In areas where squirrels are active, you need to have a good 10 feet of clearance between.
They can jump, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, we don't tend to think of rats the way that we do squirrels, but, squirrel's just a rat with good PR.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rats can jump quite a distance. You need a minimum of 5 feet in order to keep them from getting from a tree branch to the roof.
Wow.
Yeah. And they're quite capable, so it's important to keep trees and such away from the house. It's not an unusual practice in areas where people have deer for them to put up a fence that's 6 or 8 feet high.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, where that fence comes in contact with the house, usually the roof line comes within a couple of feet of that.
Mm-hmm.
When you attach that to the house, and unfortunately, that's just you've built a ladder for the raccoon to get on the roof. So we don't recommend that you run the fence lines up against the roof line.
So are there other things that you do at Beacon that I might not know, like, or realize, like the vent screen replacement things? You guys do that?
Yes, we do some minor repairs. Mm-hmm. We are general contractors, but we're only outfitted for doing rodent proofing.
Yeah.
You know, so we're not going to fix a roof or you know, remodel a bathroom or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But if the foundation vents are damaged, or if the access for the crawl space doesn't have a door on it, or if you need a vapor barrier, things of that nature, then that's the kind of work that we do on that side.
Mm-hmm.
We also do it's a bare ground weed control.
Mm-hmm.
So for folks that have gravel driveways and you know, rock planting beds and things of that nature, we have applications that we make to keep the weeds and vegetation out of those.
Wow. Okay. So what is a plan like a program? I, you know, sign up for, are there different tiers of pest programs that you offer?
A little bit. Yeah. A lot of pests are kind of one-time pests.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when you're dealing with things like cockroaches or bed bugs or something of that nature, then those get a one-time visit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there may be three or four visits involved in solving the problem, but once the problem's done, there's no ongoing maintenance.
Okay.
For your general maintenance, you're going to deal with rodents. You're going to have to do something to manage them, otherwise they eventually find their way into the house.
Mm-hmm.
So rodent control is something that we incorporate into our maintenance programs. The insect control is typically done on a quarterly basis.
Mm-hmm.
We do back the services in between applications, so if something does happen to get ahead of us, like the odorous house ant, that's mm-hmm. One of the few insects that can overwhelm an application. You know, if something like that happens, then we come back and there's no additional charge. But the most popular programs that we offer are insect and rodent control on a regular basis, combined with inspections performed at intervals.
Do you find the stuff you use, like the chemicals, I don't know what you call it, the treatments,
mm-hmm.
do the pests evolve and adapt to it?
That's not so much of an issue for things like carpenter ants or insects. That the native insects that would approach your home,
mm-hmm.
Resistance isn't a real problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's the, I don't know, for lack of a better term, domestic insects.
Yeah.
So things like fleas,
mm-hmm.
They can develop resistance because they reproduce very quickly. If you have a product that only kills 90% of them, it's that 10% that gets to reproduce.
Okay.
So, you know, resistance can develop very quickly in populations that lay large numbers of eggs and have a high turnover per generation.
God, it's so gross. Just thinking about bugs laying eggs all over the place.
Yes. Well, we won't get into a discussion about food tolerances. So.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Ay, ay, ay.
I don't eat a lot of peanut butter or hot dogs.
Yeah? Why is that?
Because the food tolerances are published.
Yeah. Oh, right. Touche. Well, it's about 3 minutes till, so we have a few more minutes to burn here. Any other information you want to hit us with, Ed?
Well, certainly if you want to get a hold of us, mm-hmm. We're at 800-300-2752. You can find us at beaconpestcontrol.com on the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to apologize in advance because we're in the midst of revamping our website, so it's, mm-hmm. It's a bit rudimentary right now, but all of the features that the clients need, can they work.
Yeah, they're still there.
Yeah, it's just the appearance that needs improving.
Okay.
Yep. And
you have any job openings, or are you staffed fully right now?
Right now we're fully staffed, but we may be looking to hire another technician here by midsummer, end of summer.
Oh, okay. Now, is that like part-time, full-time?
No, we only hire full-time.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do I need special training?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
If you don't come with a license, then we have to train you, and,
yeah.
And Department of Agriculture has to license you.
Okay.
Is
that not that you would guarantee anybody anything, but can I get a jump? Is there some classes I can take now so when that time comes I'm prepared?
Everything that we need is provided by the Department of Agriculture, so it's just a matter of getting the manuals.
Okay.
WSU administers the testing, but everything can be found at the Department of Ag's website.
Their website.
Mm-hmm.
Look up pest management or pest control, something like
that.
Pest something? Yeah?
Yeah. Okay. It's, what is it? pest licensing.
Oh, okay.
Is what it's under.
Okay.
But, yeah, if you've got your certifications, it makes it a whole lot easier for a company to hire.
Yeah.
At that point, it's a matter of, assigning a route.
Right. Okay. Because you do the Department of Ag's protocol, standards, procedures, or I know nothing about
it. As far as licensing goes, you have to have a license from the Department of Agriculture in order to do pest control. If you're applying pesticides, even if they're over-the-counter products, you're supposed to have a license.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you coming in and hanging out and
educating
us as always. Yeah. Now I want to go look for fungus.
Well, you look for the water because that's where the fungus is.
Okay.